News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mobile Mornings, and we've got ourselves a very, very nice day. It looks like a nice stretch of days right through the weekend. That's so unusual, springtime in Mobile, to have a cluster of days in a row where it's calm.
Perfect.
And nice. Yeah,
and really
That's
nice.
Basically what we're getting right here.
Yeah, and it's couldn't come at a better time with Easter on the way.
No kidding. And so I guess the next chance of rain, I think it's going to be slight. It's going to be Tuesday. So what's going on in Montgomery? A lot of the guests keep talking about, you know, the gambling bill, which is unresolved at this point, as most of you know. The school choice bill, which was passed, and Quinn Hillier says was even applauded on a national level. So, okay, we'll see how all that works out.
You had the IVF situation.
Oh, yeah.
Which
jammed up everything, right?
Jammed everything up the first half of the session, and they pass legislation allowing basically these companies, which there's only three in the state that provide IVF services, they get basically civil immunity from lawsuits that people might levy against them if any embryos are damaged during the course of the IVF process. But of course, that took up a lot of bandwidth during the first half of the session, took a lot of national articles that were written about it, and still some confusion, or at least some hesitance on behalf of the IVF providers to jump back into allowing that.
Right.
They're trying to make sure they have full immunity in case anything happens. But like
and
you said,
the story started in Mobile.
Yeah.
With somebody, I don't know, somebody that wasn't well mentally, destroying
embryos
at one of the hospitals here, I think the infirmary. But anyway, that's where it all began.
Yeah. And so still kind of unresolved as that works its way through the legal experts at those different IVF clinics. But I think gambling is kind of the last big thing that going in we knew would be a major issue. It sounds like it's just going to kind of die where it is. And listening to Jeff Poor talk about it more yesterday, how he said the House, as they put together this legislation over the course of the last year and then passed it pretty quickly, all things considered, through the House, the State House, they didn't check with the Senate and say, hey, what do you guys think about this bill that looks like it'll pass the House? What do you think about it? Because the Senate didn't like anything really about the House's bill, completely tore it apart, leave it so it's just the referendum on whether gambling should be legally allowed by Alabama's Constitution or not. And then other than that, you're just voting on a simple lottery. No sports gambling. No
casinos.
No new casinos. Along with the lottery, you've got the compact that will have to be agreed to and signed between the state and the Porch Band of Creek Indians. And then so they will get basically, it seems like, full casinos on tribal land, meaning they get table games, which they don't have now, and several other things. So that's, and it doesn't sound like the House likes the Senate's version. So
no,
very possible that we end up with just no vote on any sort of gambling this year.
You know, when you have laws and they become antiquated because of technology, so suddenly now, well, this is covered, but now this isn't. We didn't see this coming 20 years ago, whatever, right? When it comes to communications or, you know, social platforms and everything like that, now you have to undertake all of these things and say, well, and things keep moving along.
Right.
Well, that even happens in alcohol, it appears. Because Senator Bobby Singleton Greensboro reintroduced a bill recently that would permit the sale of ready-to-drink mixed spirits wherever beer and wine are sold rather than just at the ABC stores.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would increase the availability of these drinks from 1,000 locations. I guess that's how many ABCs. No, maybe that's ABC plus privately owned liquor stores, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To 4,600 statewide.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting the way this thing has gone because as Senate Bill, and you can help explain this, everybody, as Senate Bill 259, that would allow for RTD spirits.
Yeah, ready to drink.
Ready to drink, RTD. Okay. A volume of up to 8% to be sold at like grocery stores, convenience stores, things like that. Now, he first launched the effort to expand the availability of RTD spirits. Last year, Senate Bill 321. Now, that would have permitted RTD spirits with an alcohol by volume of up to 12.5% to be sold alongside beer and wine.
Yeah.
And
so that was the big compromise.
That was the pushback or compromise. First of all, the constituents in Greensboro and other areas that Bobby Singleton represents, are they pretty sucked up about the RTDs? I don't know why this would be such a bill important to him that he'd come back around the corner
a second time.
Yeah. So evidently, his constituents are all for these. They're popular.
Yeah,
among his constituents.
And it is kind of a new product, right?
It's like a new technology.
New.
Right.
Yeah.
Now we have to organize our laws around it. And this has got to be simply how it's two things. Where it's sold, okay, that's on the commerce end of it, on the money-making end of it, but to the people it's where it's available. Mm-hmm. We don't care who sells it. We care that it's available to us easily. And that's where all this is coming down to, right?
Right, yeah, because, with these new ready-to-drink mixes, and I know it's kind of like the new thing. You've got a lot of people that are putting out their own bottles of tequila. Mm-hmm. Celebrities that they get in bed with some company that's already making tequila,
right?
Slap a new logo and a name on it,
yeah.
And they're off to making more money.
Yeah.
Seeing the same thing with a lot of these ready-to-drink brands, where you've got popular podcasters or media sites, and they come up with, hey, like Barstool Sports, they're like, hey, this is our version of a ready-to-drink drink.
And because of the popularity of the platforms of the podcasts, it turns into sales.
Right, exactly. And so they'll have like vodka mixed drinks in soda cans or tequila mixed drinks in soda cans, and kind of a lot like what we've seen over the past couple of decades. But they generally would use, malt liquor, some sort of a mixture of that. Mm-hmm. And then they'd sell it to you as a seltzer, alcoholic seltzer of some sort. But it's really weird with the state's control over the alcohol industry in Alabama, why they feel so against selling these drinks at a level of 12.5% alcohol by volume, but 8%. Bobby Singleton's thinking, well, maybe I can sneak this through, because you go into a gas station. Just the other day, I'm standing there waiting in line to make my purchase, and you've got these boxes of wine that are, I think, 17-18% alcohol by volume. But because it's wine, that's allowed. Or you'll see, they've got these little shooters up at the front. Usually it's Fireball, or they'll do Jello shots or something. And that's not really Fireball whiskey, or whatever you want to call what Fireball actually is. That's another version of malt liquor, the way I understand it.
Okay.
So they can get it in under that definition. They get it into the store, and then you're still selling alcohol that is a higher percentage of alcohol by volume than a lot of these other things they apparently won't allow. So it's all about the money and who's paying them.
Right.
And apparently a lot of the alcohol sellers do not like the idea of these RTDs being available on the same shelves that they are.
Right, going to diminish their returns. And think about this, too. When you're talking about alcohol consumption and is it the percentage of alcohol? Within, mm-hmm. What are we talking about with beer and even so, this? 12.5 means what?
Most of your normal domestic and domestic light beer, you're looking at between 4 and 6% alcohol by volume. You look at some of the heavier craft beers, you get up there 8 to sometimes 12%. Some beer way over 12% alcohol by volume. And then I think with most wine, you're dealing with anywhere between 6 and 15%.
All right. But here's where where the case falls completely through on saying the beer's okay. Because look, it's only this.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find at most grocery stores anything less than a 12-pack, okay? so the idea that, it's not, it doesn't really get that buzz, but I do
it's only 6% alcohol. What if I drink 12?
I plan on all 12.
Right.
I'm watching 3 games today.
Yeah.
And so this is not necessarily me. I'm just telling a story. But it's like, that's... you know, if you go to a grocery store, and even the larger, like a case or a 24-pack or whatever, they try to make it as convenient for you to carry that thing out. Mm-hmm. Now, it's like, I don't want a 24-pack. I just want a 6-pack. Maybe,
right.
Maybe but the way they... So I'm just saying that it's a little hypocritical, I think. It's really got to do back with you're talking about who's making the money and how much.
Yeah, I mean, you have that portion of Sean's opener on Midday Mobile where you have the former state legislator saying, what's wrong with the beer we got? It drank pretty good, don't it?
Yeah.
You remember that was the big fight over craft beer.
Yeah.
And where it should or shouldn't be allowed to be sold.
How long ago was that?
Well, that was probably, a decade ago?
Okay.
Maybe 15 years ago that fight was going down. And
craft beers were really threatening the
normal, the domestic beer industry.
Right.
So you had the big players, Anheuser-Busch, name whoever, they were pushing back against availability of craft beer mm-hmm. at all these different locations, and with good cause, right? I mean, you see, I'd love to see stats now of how big of a chunk of that business has been taken out by craft beer companies. And of course, the big companies have gone on and bought a lot of those.
Bought them back.
Initially privately owned company or locally owned companies. But there was pushback against that. And you could see the same kind of pushback. I don't think RTDs are as big of a moneymaker as craft beer became. But you could kind of see the same forces pushing back against that. Now, what I love about this, and I'm being sarcastic, but remember, they put together this task force, this like alcohol task force, in order to study these RTD drinks. And it was that task force who recommended against expanding the access to these RTD drinks. And I think in that report, a big reason why was the ABV cap at 12.5%. So now you have this reworked one from Singleton, but I have no idea if that'll even pass.
I have no idea. I mean, if these things are already manufactured at this rate, this alcohol percentage, it would seem to me that they're manufactured one way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it varies from brand to brand. I don't know, but the 12.5 down to 8%, this is the way it's been reintroduced, right? So it's still got a shot, correct?
Right? Yeah, and I don't know how many different brands that takes off the shelf,
right?
Lowering that number from 12.5 to 8%, but there won't be nearly as many available if that's what passes.
And I don't think we have to go back as far as the beer controversy as just to the medical marijuana and the government involved with that. And well, they I guess they had to be, but the way that's all come out. Awfully wonky,
to say the least.
Time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8:19, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Turning up your voice. Want to call? 251-343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. And come on down next Saturday, April 6th, the second annual Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo. We're going to have a great time out there at Bicentennial Park in Stockton. I had the pleasure last year of emceeing the Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo. And
hey, man, I was there.
You were there.
You did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Really great job.
They made it easy because they had such a stacked schedule throughout the day. Remember, music pretty much all day long. And in between, they had some great demos that they'll have again this year. Our own friend, Captain Bobby Abruscato, champion fisherman and professional fishing guide. He'll be out there giving some great information, tips, and tricks for when you're fishing. And also, championship turkey callers, Kenny Weiss Sr. and Jr., KJ. They'll be back with a demo this year. It's all going to be a really good, really fun time. That's next Saturday, April 6th at Bicentennial Park in Stockton, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So you'll have all day a bunch of great vendors out there. You get to meet a lot of new people and new businesses. The music I mentioned, plus all kinds of really great food. I had a lot of crawfish last year. Check them out, northbaldwinchamber.com for more information. But that is the Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo next Saturday, April 6th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Bicentennial Park in Stockton. By the way, it's free and open to the public.
It's great. There's a lot of vendors there, so it's a fun time. It's a beautiful park too, which I was not aware of. If I've been there, it was so many years ago, I didn't recall. But really, really, really nice park up there mm-hmm. in Stockton, right off the interstate. And if the weather that day is anywhere close to what we had last year,
Perfect.
Absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. It was a good time. Dan and Dalton, 825 FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, and appreciate some of the texts this morning at 251-343-0106. Ken says, I am for the RTD2 drinks.
I saw that.
RTD, so the ready-to-drink. You just slap a number on the end of that, and you have a space machine. You've got R2-D2, so I like that. Jerry says...
He looked like he was in a can, so there you go.
Yeah, there's probably a brand out there.
Just
RTD, R2-D2.
Just like him.
Yeah, exactly. Jerry says, the problem, the ABC board, which I agree with that. I think the problem is the ABC board, but short and to the point with that text. I thought this was, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but... The Alabama public opinion, well, this is from PARCA. So they're the Public Affairs Research Council of Alabama. And they do this annually, the Alabama Public Opinion Survey. They surveyed 500 Alabamians, and they say across multiple demographics, they did this between October and December of last year. And they were asking about taxes. The council asked, what kinds of tax increases voters would be willing to pay to increase funding for education. So a couple things here. They said that not enough money in the state is spent on education and not enough money in the state is spent on health care. So they were asked, would you pay more sales tax in order to increase funding for education? 60% said no.
Were they just looking to see how lopsided it would be? No to yes? Because the question itself, in regards to any kind of a tax, the answer
would be generally no.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out, how to read these stats exactly, because you ask 500 people, should more money be spent over here? They say yes. And you ask them, well, will you pay the taxes? And they say no.
Yeah.
It seems like pretty much how everyone in America feels at all times.
The numbers are closer on some than, for instance, one of the closest ones I see here is pay tax on internet purchases.
Mm-hmm.
No is 55.46%. Yes, 37.03%. So, okay, money bags, go ahead and spend more on your Amazon purchase.
Yeah, so when you separate them out, more people are willing to pay taxes on internet purchases. And then after
we don't
that,
want to pay taxes looking somebody in the eye.
Right. So behind that, 33% said they'd pay more sales tax. 32% said they would be willing to pay more income tax, while 27% said they would be willing to pay more property tax. Now, they asked them, okay, well, if you just want to pay one of these, but you don't want to tell us which one, would you do that? And 63% said yes.
So that's how they concluded this final statement at all. Citizens want to see higher levels of investment in education and are willing to put their money where their mouth is, the report concludes.
Mm-hmm.
After all those no.
Yeah.
Then they asked a question that...
Would you be willing to pay any of these taxes?
Kind of staged the question, yeah, to try and get a yes.
Exactly. So kind of interesting there, but, we've spent, as a state, a ton of money on education. And that money went up in major ways over the last 3 years, and we haven't seen the return on investment.
No.
So
no.
It's something, it's easy to say, right? Well, if we're 52nd in the country in education or whatever number we are now, we must not be putting enough money into it. But that's not the case. I think that's what the general Alabamian looks at and sees, and they say, well, we just need to spend more money there. Well, that's not fixing the problem. And
no.
I think the state legislature knows that fully well, that money isn't solving the education problem.
And I think that ranking is actually 61st.
Not 52nd?
I don't know how you get to be 52 or 61, but... And so let's see in 5 years if there's an increase in test scores, what kind of impact the School Choice Act will have.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to see.
It's the most dramatic change we've seen.
And you wonder how long it'll take to start seeing what those results
exactly.
are, right?
Exactly. 8:30, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk, 106.5.
On FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday morning. Now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. And just a few days left in March. Man, this month has flown by. End of the month, a great time to get a great deal at McConnell Automotive.
That's right, man. We got some great deals going on here. We got a bunch of brand new trucks. We hadn't had this much inventory in years, but we've got them. We got Yukons, we got AP4s, we got Denali Ultimates, we got regular Denalis. We got plenty of them on the new car side. We got a great selection of used cars too. Everything's online at McConnellAutomotive.com. We got work vans. Anybody looking for a Ram van, we've got one, but it's got bins in it and everything. So, like I said, we've got a great selection of vehicles here. So come see us. It's going to be a beautiful day today, and come on by.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and that website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
The month has flown by, just like Flacco.
Oh, boy.
I didn't mean to bring up something.
Flacco the Owl.
Flacco the Owl. When did we talk about that? A little before 7?
Yeah. If you've missed it, and it's kind of been our conversation off the air this morning.
Yeah.
It's about the New York hero, Flacco the Owl, who he escaped from Central Park Zoo.
Yeah.
Over a year ago.
Was your freedom worth it, Flacco? I would say no.
That's a question that only Flacco can answer. So Flacco the Owl becomes...
Well, he can't answer it now because he's dead.
He's dead.
He's in the Owl Morgue. They did a complete autopsy on him.
Mm-hmm.
They autopsied an owl.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention how he owl died.
Easy now. Don't come at me with this. I thought I knew everything I needed to know.
No, I didn't break everything to you. So he became this popular owl once he broke out of the Central Park Zoo. And then he's been flying around creating havoc in New York City since he broke out of the zoo.
An owl is a big, you know, it can be a frightening bird.
Yeah. Well, that's what the people in a building on the Upper West Side said when it flew into their building. And that's how Flacco ended up perishing. But it's what they found inside of Flacco's body that, if I were a New Yorker, would give me major cause for concern.
Like, here's what your city's all about. Yeah. You had an owl who was fine and dandy inside the walls and fences of a zoo.
Right.
And then he gets out and he's on his own in the big city. And man, things. Now, he may have had a great time. I don't know. But like you were saying, he was going for it.
He was going for it. 13-year-old Eurasian eagle owl. So maybe, is that a midlife crisis or a late life crisis? I don't know how old these owls get. I think they get pretty old. So they did this post-mortem autopsy after he flies into the building. Flacco had severe pigeon herpes virus. Pigeon herpes.
It sounds darn right. Downright awful.
So they said that's from eating feral pigeons, which had become a regular part of Flacco's diet ever since he broke out of the out of his bars there at the zoo. And he also had exposure to 4 different types of rat poison, which they hand out like candy in New York City as they try to keep their rat problem under control. But then you have Flacco out there just eating everything it can and picking up every disease in New York City. So that's kind of been the discussion. Off the air is the unfortunate and untimely passing of Flacco the Owl there in New York.
Am I seeing that the average age of a pigeon is lifespan in the wild? Well, here's the thing. The wild is what brought them down. Not like the forest, but New York City.
Right, yeah.
And I've got one more question for you, by the way, about Flacco. I don't want you to leave this room until it's
okay.
So the lifespan of in the wild is 20 to 30 years.
For pigeons. Now
for owls.
Okay, yeah, Eurasian eagle owl lives to about 20. So
he got
13 of his 20 years in there, and the last year was a hell of a year, as we kind of mentioned there. So Flacco the Owl.
You didn't finish the story, though. Once he flew into the building, you say that's when he died, so what happened?
Well, he flew into the building.
He hit the building.
He hit the building. He did not mean to fly into the building.
I thought you meant he flew like in a window, into a window.
No, it was not an open building. He flew into a building.
We've seen some of that carnage right here at our own studio.
We have, actually, yeah. And, you know, they actually thought that maybe Flacco did that on purpose because of the diseases that he apparently gathered over the last year in New York. What would you think if you're raising a kid there? You're like, hey, I've got bad news. Flacco died. But you're thinking, Flacco, in his year of freedom, got pigeon herpes and 4 different types of rat poison, and I'm raising my kids in this. It's crazy. But the kids hopefully aren't out there eating feral pigeons like Flacco was.
I think you sit your 9-year-old down and you say, look, it's a chance to learn something. Flacco made some bad decisions. And you just move on. You hope your kid gets it and doesn't ask too many questions about pigeon herpes.
Yes. Derek texting in says, one of the most odd things about this Alabama education discussion is how little, if any, asks parents and or teachers what they need or think. Seems like they would know. He said, to the effect that I don't believe anyone is actually serious about solving or improving the education problem. He said, some dude from a TED Talk will say the public school system is where great ideas go to die. Anyway, yeah, the education problem is a real problem. Now, I think they'll tell you that they spoke to a lot of parents and a lot of teachers about this school choice thing. I know the teachers' union was against it, mm-hmm. and pretty much all teachers in the state against the CHOOSE Act. The parents they talked to seemed to all, for the most part, be for it. Now, the successful school systems across the state, I think, are more against it. The successful public school systems.
Because they're doing fine on their own.
Yeah, because they're doing fine. They don't want something to come in and upset the good vibes and the momentum they have.
Have you ever heard Jeff talk about Andalusia? Andalusia schools.
They've got good ones.
They've got great ones. And they score great and they everything. There are no private schools in the county. It's all public school.
Andalusia, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you saw Saraland push back.
Yeah.
During one of the public comment sections here, the Saraland City Schools were, at least at the time, against CHOOSE Act.
Yeah, they
are. Which makes sense because they're doing so well, right?
They are. I mean, the schools are, the product you see on the football field is simply a corner of the story up there in Saraland. Yeah, they put a lot of money into athletics. They certainly do, but they put a lot of money into the schools themselves, and they are, without a doubt, seeing the benefit of that.
Yeah, they are. Terry texted in, the education system here and nationwide needs a forensic audit to see where our money is actually going. Yeah, and I heard Gordon Deal on the show before us, 4 to 6 a.m., great show, this morning with Gordon Deal. But he was talking with the journalist about teacher pay raises. And I'm sure plenty of teachers will say the same, but at least in this interview, the journalist was saying, hey, man, they just don't pay teachers.
So they're basically getting the cost of inflation.
Right.
Since the 1990s, somewhere around there, that their salaries have pretty much stayed the same.
Relative to inflation.
Exactly.
Which means it's gone up quite a bit because inflation's gone up. So, yeah, they call that COLA, right? The cost of living adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
But is that the issue in Alabama? Would paying teachers more? I mean, you would think that would bring more and better teachers into the state, or at least we'd be able to retain more teachers who become teachers in the state. But I don't know if that solves the problem. If saying maybe it does, maybe saying, hey, we'll pay you this much more over the going rate in Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi and Florida if you come teach in Alabama.
And when you say teach in Alabama, you know, are we talking about Bessemer or are we talking about Grove Hill or are we talking about, you know, when we talk about the state and there's a lot of areas that are even much more rural than the cities in the rural areas, like a Grove Hill or Monroeville. You get outside that to the county itself, you've got a completely different lifestyle going on, and you've got a lot of kids that they go to those little regional schools.
Yeah, it's a big ask to ask someone fresh out of school, fresh out of Auburn or Alabama or South Alabama, say, hey, we're going to pay you. We'll pay you well, but you're moving to a town that doesn't have a Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know, they're living in these college towns and maybe even from Mobile or Birmingham. They're used to a certain lifestyle.
Right.
Well, you think of all the teachers over the years in these rural schools. They're homegrown and they want to stay in their rural towns until they retire and live there in their retirement. You don't see that happening as much. You know, kids that grow up and become teachers in Grove Hill generally aren't staying in Grove Hill to keep teaching.
No.
So that's a major problem.
I didn't recognize the problem many, many years ago. The first job I had, I think I mentioned this before, was doing football games in these two small Georgia towns. One was Washington, Georgia, which was a little bigger. Lincolnton, right on the state line with South Carolina, was even smaller and more rural, I guess you would say. Had like one light and one of everything.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they had, basically.
One fast food restaurant.
One fast food restaurant, which was a Tasty Freeze that they refused to call a Tasty Freeze. They called it the Dairy Queen. And I would say, well, if you look at that sign, they're adjacent to the building.
It says,
but they wanted to call it Dairy. They wanted a Dairy Queen, so they just wished it into being. But it never occurred to me back then. I was worried about offensive lines and production and good defensive play and trying to figure out how good that team was in Little Lincolnton, Georgia. And they were good. They were A-ball, but they were like a Leroy.
Okay.
They won all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And but to think about those schools from pre-K right through 12, how do you manage to staff those schools like that?
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, with all this political talk about education, you know, I think we have to slow down a little bit and say there's a lot of good teachers out there with a lot of good reasons that they're doing what they've done. I've met them. I've met them. I've talked with them. There's a lot of people with their heart in the right place that, mm-hmm. that teach for the right reasons. So we don't want to, yes, you can look at the test scores and say, what's going on here? It doesn't all fall on her or him. There's a lot of teachers out there that are good at what they do, and the students definitely, if they choose to, can benefit from their work.
Oh, no doubt about that. And a lot that listen to us, a lot of teachers that listen to us when they can. But it's also a big ask to tell teachers, hey, you're going to be here 2/3 of the year, and you'll be here, 8 to 10 hours a day. Teachers obviously stay longer than the kids do generally. But then after that, these kids, they're not going to go home and do homework. We'll be lucky if they just stay out of trouble from the time that they leave your class to the time they come back in the morning. I mean, there's no parent by parent, household by household, sure. But I would say generally, you're not getting much help from the homes of these students, especially in places where the grades are just completely, you know, below average.
Yeah,
but way worse than they should be.
That speaks for itself.
Teacher kind of needs a little help from the community around them as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The trend is going the other way as far as the family staying together and supporting the kids. And there's just, I know from my work at Light of the Village, there are just some real dire needs for kids out there, because at Light of the Village, we take the kids in after school, and we get to, you know, not me as much as in years past, but the staff gets to know the kid personally, and you see hope in that kid.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes, it's completely squashed out when they get back home.
And it takes major effort. I mean, I'm just finding out myself, you know, finally, the five-year-old coming home with homework and trying to read, and you think, you know, growing up, you're like, well, when I help with homework, it'll be easy. It's stuff. It's, you have to learn how to become a teacher as a parent.
Yeah,
right?
You do.
And I'm just having a hard enough time keeping her interested to do 10 minutes of reading work at night. So the effort you have to put in as a parent is, I'm sure for most people, they would think it's kind of extreme, right? If they're not really putting a lot of effort into their children to begin with. But it's something that, you know, as a country, we've got to do. We've got to figure out how to get more people ready for life after school, and right now we're just not doing it. But I don't think throwing a lot of money at it is the answer either.
Well, I think that's we can look at it, but it's already happened, and it's already not been the answer. 849 FM Talk 106.5 Dan and Dalton and Mobile Mornings, and we will check in with the host of the next show, Jeff Poor, and talk with him about a lot of things going on around here and in Montgomery. Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:53 on a beautiful Wednesday morning. And I like this. The temperature's just creeping up. This means it's going to be a comfortable day. We're at 57 degrees right now.
Yes, we are. A couple texts to get to, and then we'll talk with Jeff Poor. Terry says, classroom behavior has degraded, and teachers are getting fed up. Yeah, I can't. I really can't. There's two jobs that I can't imagine having right now, and that's being a teacher and being a police officer. Two that are just about impossible to do. I mean, everyone's got a phone on you all the time. Everything's taken out of context. You're not allowed to discipline properly in both occupations. Joel says, you can put all the money you want into the school system. It's not going to help. I've watched videos of the school systems in China. China will be here long after America's gone because of the foundation, the discipline that the kids have. It's amazing the way they were brought up. Structurally, mentally, physically, this country is screwed. Well, that's the Chinese schools you've seen footage of. I imagine there's some schools in China where things aren't looking so great for the people that are in there.
A middle school in a cave. How's the lighting there?
And last one here, let's see. Ken says private school teachers get paid a lot less than public school teachers, so the problem has to be something other than what the teachers get paid. So appreciate some of the text. 251-343-0106. By the way, Terry says I-65, exit 13, and got an accident. And traffic is backing up. I-65, exit 13, fire and police on the scene. It is a Wednesday. That means it's time to check in with Jeff Poor of the Jeff Poor Show, which is on the way here in minutes. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Still in session. I guess we still call it mid-session right now. And what has your attention out of Montgomery?
A second halftime here, I guess, the way to describe it, with the week off up. I guess everybody's kind of looking at gambling right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a few lawmakers. It's a mixed bag in the House, whether or not that the House will take it up and take a look at it. But I think by the day, the chances are decreasing that you'll get something on gambling. But I just say this. They got a lot of things that were typically like end of session type bills done already on the front end. They got the ballot harvesting bill, the DEI ban, the school choice, these controversial things that you would expect filibusters from Democrats. Well, I would be watching, and then where it gets kind of frantic, it's at end of the session, once they pass the budgets and there's no BIR, no budget isolation resolution, it's sort of a free-for-all. It would not surprise me to see maybe the House and or the Senate take another shot at gambling here. Mm.
So basically, it sounds like you're saying they'll have nothing better to do.
But it's also easier to pass bills because you don't have that extra hurdle that you have to go through. In Alabama, nothing gets through the legislature until the budgets are passed unless they pass what's called a budget isolation resolution, and that's an extra round of votes, which can present some challenges, especially in the Senate. And with that's out of the way, and that just sort of clears more of a path for gambling.
Hmm. Hey, District 2, a couple of things happened that are interesting. The Democrats throw all of their weight behind Shamari Figures over the weekend, and then Carolyn Dobson comes out with her pledge.
Term limit.
Let's start with Caroline Dobson and her actual chance at a win over Brubaker.
I think it's getting better by the day. I'm impressed with the campaign. Paul Shashi is her consultant. She's very coached up. It's tough. If you look at the map, I mean, Brubaker from Phoenix City all the way to Butler County to Greenville sort of dominates.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of mixed south of there, Dobson and Albritton. Can Dobson get all of those Albritton votes? It's still an uphill fight, but like I said, she's the Mobile candidate for the LAC. I mean, even though she's from Montgomery, she's got the backing of Mayor Stimson. She's got Paul Birch. She's got the former sheriff, Sam Cochran, who I think really kind of runs the county politically. So that's no small thing. It's just Brubaker pulls in such a name ID and favorability in Montgomery up there. She's got to overcome that.
Yeah, and then it seems all the Democrats have jumped on with Figures after his pretty dominating win that took him to the runoff, except Marika Coleman. She endorses Anthony Daniels. Looks like Figures is a pretty heavy favorite.
I think so, and he did well enough in the primary. There's no reason to think otherwise.
I look forward to the show, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Sure. Jeff Poor Show on the way in minutes. That does it for Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 6 right here on FM Talk 106.5.